everyone. My name is Nase DeSanders for Borrowing Tape, and I am here today with the writer and director of Arch Enemy, Adam Egypt Mortimer. Arch Enemy will be released on December 11th, 2020, so get ready because it's a lot of fun. Thank you so much for being here today, Adam.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk to you about it.
Of course. It's a very interesting movie to talk about for sure. We haven't seen anything like it so far. I'm really excited. So I'll start you off with a softball. Which films or directors have influenced you as a filmmaker, but also the film Arch Enemy?
I think one of there were a couple films or filmmakers I was thinking about right at the beginning when I was thinking about Arch Enemy. One was, I was thinking about Aronofsky's The Wrestler, mm-hmm. right? And I was thinking about, like, it would be interesting to make a movie that's sort of like that, about a man who's like far beyond his glory days and trying to reclaim the tragedy of that, but do it with a superhero. Mm. And that idea that I had like a guy in a shredded cape sitting at a bar drinking whiskey, you know, was kind of the inspiration for what Arch Enemy would be. And then I was thinking about what would it look like if Wong Kar-wai directed a superhero movie? And in his movies, especially his earlier movies like Chungking Express and Fallen Angels, I would think about a lot, even when we were shooting the movie, because he makes these films that are like, they're sort of like a genre, like Ashes of Time is like a swordsman kung fu movie, but it's so not focused on that. And it becomes about the characters and the poetry of their tragedy and about, sort of finding the characters in a place and bringing it to life. And so I thought about that a lot. And on some days, you know, there would be days on this movie where some huge problem happened at 4 a.m. where it was like, oh, now we can't shoot the scene that I thought we were going to shoot today. Mm. So what are we going to do instead? And I would watch a couple minutes of a Wong Kar-wai movie in the morning at 4 a.m. and go, okay, he would just show up and make it up. He would say, you know, and I sort of got in that mindset. I'd be like, wow, I've got Amy Simons, I've got Glenn Howerton, I've got Zoli Griggs, I've got all these, you know, I've got Joe, like, I'll come up with something. They'll do something good. And sometimes those days of making it up, so, or being inspired by what was happening in the moment, would be the best days. And so that filmmaker, Wong Kar-wai specifically, was really helpful to me in all of those ways.
That is so interesting. I like that idea of really just taking it day by day and working with what you have that day. That's really interesting. So could you tell us a little bit about the title, Arch Enemy? So like in earlier moments of the film, we're told that Cleo is Max's arch enemy. So that's, I guess, our literal meaning. But what are the further meanings of it?
Yeah, it's funny. I think that this movie and the movie that I made before it, Daniel Isn't Real, are really speak to each other. Mm-hmm. And that movie was about, it was thematically about the way that we are our own enemies, or we want to be a good person, but there's a voice in our head that fills us with dark thoughts, or, you know, tells us to do the wrong thing. And then that's, of course, externalized by being a story about a demon. And I think that there's a lot of ways in which, like giving it a title like that, I'm looking at this movie and inviting you to think about, like, who is the arch enemy? I mean, it's an open question. And, there's a lot of people in this movie who are like murderous criminals. And then there are other people who are acting impulsively against their own best interest and things like that. And so I think, it's trying to operate on all of those levels, from the most cosmic and Max Fist versus Cleo Ventric, who like makes giant robots and they fight in the cosmos, to a guy drinking himself to death alone, you know, and both of those have a sense of an arch enemy. And so I think that was an idea. And also when I first started writing it, I tried out many different titles that were much more mush mouth, complicated half sentences and things like that I normally like to do with too many words. And when I was able to boil it down to Arch Enemy, it felt so science fiction and cool. And then so the simpler you can make something, the more ideas that can flow from it.
That's really interesting. I like that you related back to your previous film, because it's almost as if the titles could be switched. So mm-hmm. It could be Max Isn't Real and Arch Enemy. They're very similar. Because there are a few points in the film where I'm like, is Max actually from a different dimension, or is he just crazy?
Yeah, I like to hold that you know, doubt. I think doubt is important, and you know, the idea of I think with both this movie and Daniel, it's like visualizing something that may or may not be real. You know, visualizing Daniel standing around talking to Luke when you're going, wait, is he schizophrenic and that's not a real person? But we can see it physically, but still doubt its reality. If you can show somebody something and you still doubt it.
Yeah.
And so when we're showing Max's stories, which are memories or fantasies, or we're not sure what, there's a level of abstraction to them. And I wanted it to feel dreamlike. And then also the world that he's really in, the real world, is both bleak and colorful in a way where I think the whole thing can feel like you, if you start to doubt the reality you're standing on, that's a really interesting feeling.
Absolutely. So Arch Enemy was nominated for Best Motion Picture at the Catalonian International Film Festival. That's fantastic. How was the film festival run? How's that been?
Well, frankly, it's been a little depressing because I have just been here at my home, not traveling. You know, and it's sad. This is a real, we did get to have a premiere in LA. Our world premiere was at Beyond Fest, which was a drive-in. So everybody got to show up, and it was a way to get people together in the same space, but still remain safe, which was really awesome. You know, but, you know, last year I was constantly traveling the world. I was in Korea, I was in Florida, I was in London, I was in Spain, I was in Texas. And like, to be able to show the movie and then interact with people directly who are having an emotional experience, you know, to talk to people after Daniel, who would come up to me and say, I had, you know, a real psychological problem, I had a mental illness, and this movie speaks to me in this way, like, that is it. That's why you make a movie. That's why you go through years of all of this agony, so you can talk to another person who gets something from it. And it's been, you know, so much harder so far to have that with Arch Enemy. And it's also made me feel like I have no idea how this movie plays to people. It's, you know, like, I could sit in theaters around the world and see people react to it. And with Arch Enemy, I'm like, wow, it's not only is it a weird movie, but like, I don't even know. I haven't even seen people's faces when they're watching it. So I don't even know.
Yeah, it's definitely a minus of this crazy year, not really getting to have that in-person interaction. But hopefully next year, maybe something, you know, we'll see.
Bring it back around. I think, you know, the plus side is, you know, people will watch this movie at home. It's designed to be really, you know, immersive. It has so much music and sound and colors. And so turn out all the lights and, you know, for 90 minutes, you can enter a completely different world. Yes. And there are no other superhero movies coming out this year. So this is like our weird, you know, psychedelic twist on superheroes. And, you know, so hopefully that all makes it a good experience.
Yes. So I saw that Nicolas Cage was originally set to play Max Fist. Is that true? And how did Joe Manganiello come to be a part of the project?
Yeah, I met Nick. I had dinner with Nick. He bought me a steak. Let me tell you, there's nothing cooler in the universe than having Nicolas Cage buy you a steak and tell you the script. Like, that's just, I was just like, I guess this is it. It's my Hollywood dream. I can just go home now. And he was super into it, and we had a great talk, and then it didn't work out, like, scheduling wise. And, you know, it's like, it's crazy. You can have a movie star say he wants to do your movie and it still doesn't work out, but that's how life works. But then, you know, amazingly, I met Joe, who is just absolutely perfect. Like, Joe is, you know, arguably, or maybe not even arguably, the most handsome man on the planet. And so just being around him makes you feel awesome. And, you know, and he's so physical that, and he loves comic books. So, you know, the first time I sat down to talk to him, we went deep into comic books and superheroes and mythology, and he just looks like Superman. But he is also, you know, he's done, you know, Streetcar Named Desire and all this theater and Tennessee Williams, and he has a degree in theater. And so he wants to play real dramatic, tragic, broken figures. And so he's so excited. He was really stoked to get into this movie and like deconstruct his look and get scruffy and be gross. And yet in his heart, you can tell there is also a man who is Superman. So he's really like the perfect person to play this. And he got very into the physicality and he wants to do all of his own stunts and jump through windows and punch people and do all that stuff. But then he also just really thrives at being this like tragic broken man.
That is so interesting. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So you are certainly growing an impressive filmography. You directed Some Kind of Hate in 2015, Daniel Isn't Real, which we've been talking about in 2019, and now Arch Enemy 2020. So you're becoming known for these unconventional dark stories. What draws you to write and direct these kinds of stories? Like, where is it coming from?
Yeah, I like to play with genre. I want to do movies that are, you know, it's a crime movie or it's a horror movie, but which really treat the characters and the emotional pain as importantly as what the genre is. I think when I was a kid, you know, I would watch dramatic movies and say, what if it was, you know, what if there was this movie and it was just about a family, but then halfway through a UFO lands? What would that be like? How would that change the dynamic? And I think for me, you know, everything always comes down to like real personal feelings and experiences. And, you know, everything, I'll write a script and I'll look at it and be like, oh, this is about my breakup. This is about, you know, when my mother died, like these kind of feelings. And I'll want to be able to bring all of that stuff to the actors and talk to them about, you know, the scene where you're fighting a demon is actually, you know, to me, you know, that feeling when you're just so sad, you know, it's like, the really interesting thing to me is this kind of connection between big genre ideas like demons or superheroes or black holes between universes and the very real feelings that we all experience and how you, it's like, I love watching Ingmar Bergman movies. I think they're the greatest. I don't think I would ever know how to write a movie like that. So in order to express those same kind of feelings about madness and loss and the terror of death, you know, I have to create demons and supervillains, but then hopefully still be creating those same kind of feelings.
I love it. So how is working with the cinematographer, Helena, is that how I say it, Hutchins?
Helena. Yeah, Helena is somebody that I met at a film festival. Last year we were both in Spain, we both had our movies there, and I just thought she was super cool. She just looked cool, she talked cool, you know what I mean? She's Ukrainian, so she has a very European sensibility. Like, in fact, on one of the days, on one of our crazy days where I was like, we can't shoot the scene we thought we were going to do, so here's what we're going to do instead. She said to me, oh, it's like we're making a European film. And I was like, she understands with me how to roll with it and make art out of what we have in front of us. And some days, you know, she would work, she had a whole crew of Russians, and so she would just be whispering in Russian with them about moving the lights around, and it created a sort of otherworldly art movie experience for me. But, you know, one of the things that was fun was I gave her some comic book art to look at. There's this artist, Jim Steranko, that did Nick Fury all the way back in the 60s, and it's so psychedelic and graphical and cool, and I gave her this big book, and I could just see how much it kind of blew her mind, and she lit up and she was like, oh, how can we shoot our movie in a way that's a reference to this kind of like the graphical, you know, understanding. And I, you know, the way that she brought the lighting and the colors to the world, I think it's an interesting thing for me because I didn't have any of the same crew I had on Daniel, but I feel like there is a consistency of the feeling or the look of it or something, which, I'm really proud of. Like, if you can feel like it's the same person, and then you get into these interesting questions of like, what Helena is contributing to it is just this like real, you know, subtle perfection of the way that the lighting and the composition is. That was, you know, I think it was important this movie was so low budget, and it was depicting a world that's like sort of gritty and grimy, but we needed a little extra, sauce to elevate it, so it didn't just look gross. It had to have all of this energy, and Helena really understood this kind of, I don't know, punk rock, futuristic, fashionable kind of vibe.
Absolutely. Yeah, the film definitely had a very distinct look, and it was very pleasing to look at. One of the most noticeable things about the look is that you integrated animation into the visual storytelling. So what made you decide to differentiate those two worlds in that way?
Yeah, they had to feel really different. You know, we have to be in sort of a very present tense world with Max Fist, and he's going through garbage to eat hot dog buns, and then he's punching drug dealers. But when he talks about this story that he carries around with him, it had to feel really different. And so we explored different options of what that could be. And I was thinking a lot about the movie Pink Floyd, The Wall, which has all these incredible animation sequences that sort of show a man who's falling apart, like his inner dreams and fantasies and craziness, and sort of landed on trying to make an animation that would feel like expressive and abstract instead of being too literal. And so, you know, trying to tell this superhero story in this way that was focused on just like a couple really immersive colors, and the lines weren't always perfect. Like I didn't want it to be perfect because it should feel sort of like a broken, misremembered, always changing kind of story. Like if we could have just done it with squiggly pencil lines, that would have been, but you know, we needed something a little bit more neon and exciting.
That's really interesting. So like, were there any major roadblocks or difficulties in getting this film made? I know most films usually have something.
I mean, it was the working with SpectreVision was wonderful. It was our second, you know, they produced Daniel Isn't Real. It's Elijah Wood's company. We wanted to start working together right away. So the desire to make the movie was very quick and easy, but we had crazily way less money than we even had on Daniel Isn't Real. So it was a really low budget movie and we were working on it very quickly, putting it together. And everything was a roadblock. I mean, every day was a roadblock. People got sick and, you know, couldn't show up that day, or, you know, this location was impossible to get, or everything was just we actually started talking about how we felt like the movie had been cursed by a witch.
Aww.
But all of that, but it gave us all of these other, you know, creative solutions that we found our way through. So I can't think of any one time, like, it's like everything was just a disaster, you know, but it was great. And now that it's all over and it was a blessing, you know, the ultimate blessing was we finished the movie just before the pandemic really hit. And so we were doing all of our posts during the lockdown times, and that has kept me busy like this whole time. Like, you know, since March, I started working with the editor and she would share her Avid on Zoom, and I've never met her in real life.
Wow.
But we made a whole movie together.
Yeah. Well, that's good. At least you didn't have to deal with the ultimate roadblock of coronavirus. If you were shooting in the middle of that, that would have been awful. But
yeah, we had one pickup day where we just needed to shoot a couple close-ups, and there was very few of us, and Kim Sherman, our producer, was so good at, you know, she kind of created a COVID protocol, and we shot in her driveway and everybody was very distant. And that was, you know, we got our little extra close-ups that we needed, like hands, putting on gloves and, you know, all that stuff.
Nice. So my final question for you, then I'll let you go. Are you working on your next project already? And can you tell us anything about it?
Yeah, I am. I have a few because I'm in the nice position now of started to read other people's scripts that are really good that I might be able to work on. And that's always been a dream. You know, I keep writing my own movies because I can't find other ones that are like what I want to do. But now I'm, you know, sort of attracting collaborators. But I also have a script that I wrote with Brian DeLu. We wrote Daniel's Reel together, and we're really hoping to get this movie made. And it has to do with capitalism and witches. It's a horror movie on the theme of capitalism and witchcraft. So I think that would be a timely movie, and we're hoping to maybe be able to shoot that one next year.
Nice. That's super exciting. Thank you so, so much for taking the time to chat with me today, Adam.
Thank you. This is great. I really appreciate it.
So everyone, make sure to check out Arch Enemy. Where can they see it? Where is it available?
It'll be available December 11th. It should be on all your digital platforms, all your iTunes and VODs and Amazons and things. I don't think it's going to be streaming right away. So, you know, rent it for $2 and turn the volume up real loud.
Nice. Yes. Yeah, so rent it. Make sure you turn off all the lights. That is the recommended way to watch it. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you later then.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.